Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out, it's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a fishing hook, and I love films. As Brody Ashton once said, the great heroes are made by the paths they choose, not the powers they are graced with. Like David Lynch was gifted the power of art and he chose to completely fuck with our heads with it. I love that shit. Yeah, agreed. Thanks, Brody. I'm recording this in the car, by the way, so sorry for the noise. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Himesh Patel, Sharon Stone, and even Clegg Plambles. But this week, it is an all-time hero, a national treasure, one of my favourite actors, Gal Dove himself. It's Mr. Ray Winston. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get 15 minutes extra chat with Ray. We talk beginnings, we talk secrets. He tells me his secrets. He does a dance to the Patreon theme tune. You get all that and more ad-free, and you get it as a video. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein and join. So, Ray Winston. This was a big one for me. Ray is one of my all-time favourite actors. I think he is one of the most charismatic performers working today. Sexy Beast is one of the films I've watched the most in my life. I was so delighted when he agreed to come on the show. We recorded this on Zoom. We'd never met before. I had no idea what he'd be like, and he was absolutely fucking delightful. I really think you're going to love this one. He has two things coming out. He's got The Gentleman on March 7th and Damsel on March 8th. Both of these are on Netflix, so make sure you watch them all. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 289 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by a producer, an actor, a movie star, a Neil by Malfer, Beowulf, Sweeney Todd, one of the three bears. He's Noah. He's a Black Widower. He's a Hugoer. He's a Departeder. He's in Indiana Joneser. And he's in one of my all-time favourite films of all time that I'm absolutely obsessed with. He's a sexy beast. Please, will you welcome to the show? He's a national treasure. Can't believe he's here. It's the one and only. Here he is. It's Mr. Ray Winston.
Ah, well, what a build-up that was, Brett. Thank you very much. That's lovely. Nice to be here. It's nice to have a little chat about movies before Christmas as well, because it gets my memory going. Huh?
What a treat, isn't it?
Yeah.
What a treat. Now, Ray Winston, if I may say, you're a national treasure. You're amazing. Yeah. Sexy Beast of all the films. You know, one of the questions is, what's the film you think you've watched the most? I think mine is Sexy Beast.
Really?
I love Sexy Beast so much. Yeah. I think you're phenomenal in it.
Well, bless you.
And I think it's a really beautiful love story.
It is, yeah. It is. I think the film I've watched the most over the years is probably Zulu.
Really?
Oh, mate, just the music, you just hear it when it comes, Men of Harlech Stand East, and you just Zulu, I'm on it, you know, and I know every word in it, and, you know, I just love it. I love Michael Caine and Stanley Baker, you know, they're all in it, you know. It's just a great cast. And they keep talking about wanting to make it again, you know. Why? Yeah. Why would you make that film again? It is a perfect film, you know? And it's what you would like.
They nailed it. They nailed it.
I did, yeah.
I was looking over your credits, and there's a lot of them. And I was like, yeah. How are you not working? Are you always working? Are you good at not working?
Or do you go mad? I obviously haven't been working the last year. We've been on strike, you know?
It's been a strike
and all that.
So have you gone mad?
Yeah, a little bit. At first, I was quite pleased about it, but not about what we were striking for, because it was correct. The strike was correct, but just that little bit of time and thinking, you know, but you've got to go back to work. You get a little bit itchy, you know, but and it's kind of waiting for the right thing to come along, you know, the right script, which I think I found now, because we're back to work. I start work in February, so, you know, that's all right. I feel fresh. I feel like I'm rearing the car, you know? Yeah.
You can't tell me what it is, I'm assuming.
I can do. It's a Jimmy White story, you know. So, and it's, I've known Jimmy for many, many years, but it's actually written brilliantly by Stevie Waddington, you know, who I've worked with. It's quite surreal, actually. You know, it's about a certain period in his life, and he's telling his story, you know, through this kind of illness he has, you know. We're all been through it sometimes, you know, drinking drugs and all that kind of shit, you know. It's brilliantly written, and, it's great to find a script like that about a sportsman, you know?
Yeah.
And a genius in his own right, you know?
That's very exciting. That's very cool.
I'm not playing Jimmy White, by the way. I'm too old for that, but yeah.
I'm playing
his manager. No.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Where are we recording this from, by the way? Where are you? You in a cupboard?
I'm in Essex.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm home for Christmas. Yeah.
I like that a lot. Ray?
Yeah.
There's something I've forgotten to tell you, which I should have said up front.
I actually should have
said it when we logged on, but I don't know how you're going to take it. you've died. You're dead.
I thought I had, you know.
Yeah?
I had this kind of feeling going on, you know. It was a stupid thing, I don't know.
How'd you die? What'd you do?
Well, I'm 66 years of age, you know, it was olive season in November, and... you know, you still think you can do things when you're 30. And, you know, be greedy in a way. It's greed. Greed that killed me, really, because, you know, we got these things that kind of whack the tree. Mm. You know, and the olives fall out of the tree and they go into a net and we collect them all up and we take them all. But sometimes when the tree's a little bit large, you can't get to the top. So I thought, you know, out of greed, these beautiful olives, I just didn't want to leave them to rot on the tree, you know. So I climb up the tree and I've done it. Very successful climbing up the tree. There was not a problem. You know, I'd had my injection in the arse earlier on in the day, so the arthritis wasn't playing up too bad, and I could climb. So, and I got to the top of the tree, and I managed to reach, but it was a couple just a little bit further out on the branch, and I fell.
Jesus.
Fell from the tree. And I wasn't really that aware that I'd actually passed over, but it must have been pretty quick, you know? I must have gone out like a light.
Instant, you reckon?
I'd like to think so. I hope I didn't suffer too. I can't remember suffering anyway. But I've had this kind of funny vibe going on that I'm not quite there, you know?
So
thank you for explaining to me. I've had a good life anyway.
It seems like you've had a great life. Tell me this. Do you worry about death?
Not anymore, because I'm dead. Yeah. No point, is it?
Taking care of that.
I should have poured out a gin and tonic, but I've got enough that was dead. I'd have poured out a gin and tonic.
Do you think there's an afterlife beyond this podcast?
I kind of hope so. It's kind of weird. My idea of what afterlife is, I've thought about that quite a bit, actually. It seems...
Please tell me.
All this information we've kind of collected and we've got inside us and this life and what we've left behind, it can't just end like that, surely. I mean, is that nature? Is that where it is? I guess it is. But to me, it's kind of like almost like a film, you know, like a videotape, if you like, that when it stops, it rewinds and it starts again. And maybe that's what the soul is. Maybe the soul is a memory. Yeah. You know, that it gets to an end and it stops and it rewinds and you go through it all again. And maybe in another film you take a different chance, you go in a different direction, I don't know. But I think the body dies, but maybe the memory doesn't, you know? I like to think that anyway.
So like reincarnation, you're not saying you come back as Ray Winston and do it all again?
Well, I don't know whether it's reincarnation or it's just, no, but it's just a memory. The memory,
yeah,
it's got something there that kind of goes on. I don't know, or is left. But maybe the memory is left in your children. I don't know.
I like that a lot. Well, here's the truth, Ray, because I know.
All right.
You're going to heaven.
You think so?
Yeah, you're going to heaven. There's a heaven and you're welcome there. And it's filled with your favourite thing. But what's your favourite thing?
Well, my favourite, I've got a lot of them. I've got a lot of favourite things.
You can have a few.
I'm watching a good film.
Yeah, that's fair.
My favourite things, I guess, are watching my kids grow.
Yeah.
You know, watching my grandchildren grow. You know, and that, to me, I'd love to be there when they have their kids. You know?
Yeah.
One of my children has had a, you know, who's my grandson. But that's the most magical moment in the world, you know. Seeing something that you produce something else that actually looks like you as well, which is
really?
Quite amazing. Yeah.
Is it more amazing having a grandkid than a kid when they were first born? Did it blow your mind even more?
It's funny. It's kind of funny. Yeah. In a way, it is.
Yeah.
You know, because something that your wife has given birth to that comes from you, you know, gives birth to something else that looks like you, and it's kind of poor little thing. You get over it, you know. But it's quite amazing, you know.
That is incredible.
Yeah. It's kind of working. That change working. That's reincarnation, if you like.
Yeah. There's the memory. Well, they're all. You can see all of them in heaven, and you can watch lots of films. And everyone in heaven is very excited to see you. They're big fans.
Okay.
They'll have all your stuff.
Oh, the bar's open anyway.
The bar's open, your gin and tonic's already ready for you.
Very nice, aren't we?
And they want to talk to you about your life, but they want to talk about your life through film. And the first thing they ask you, what's the first film you remember seeing, Ray Winston?
Very good question. The first film I remember seeing was 101 Dalmatians, Disney.
Excellent.
And it was with my mum,
who
took me to the pictures in West Ham to see it. And by all accounts, I got the right aunt with Cruella de Vil. And and I escaped from where we were sitting and ran down to the front of the screen and shook my fist and said, Cruella de Vil, leave those doggies alone.
How old are you in this lovely story?
Probably about five.
That's very nice.
Yeah, probably about five. It'd been in the early 60s. Been in the early 60s sometime. Yeah.
That's very nice. I like that very much. Do you have siblings, can I ask? Or was this, who were you with? Was this you?
My sister would have been three.
Right.
So she may have been there with mum, yeah.
Right.
May have been. I mean, it's funny because when we went to pictures years later, when we used to always go to the cinema, mum and dad always took the cinema. My dad would take me on a Wednesday afternoon when he finished in the fruit market, on a meat market, wherever he was working. And he'd pick me up from school and take me to the pictures to see a war film or a Western and all that kind of stuff when I was about 6, 7, 8 years of age, you know. We'd go out once a month and we'd go up the West End to watch a film, whether it was Thomas and Beckett, you know, about Beckett, it was Zulu or whatever. And we'd go up there, but my sister always, Laura, had to go to the toilet halfway through the film. So everyone had to get back, you know. Yeah. And I'll never forget that. But yeah, always at the toilet. I want to go. Oh, just to have a look at the toilet. That's all it was. We know.
She's a connoisseur.
Yeah.
What about scared? What's the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared?
Yeah, I do. The scariest film. I've got to explain the situation around it.
Please, right? Take your time.
Why it was so scary. I was working on a TV program many years ago in Jersey called Bergerac.
Excellent.
I had a bit of time off during the day, and we were actually stationed where we were, like the green room was in an old cinema, which was not working at the time, but we had a telly and a VHS machine there. I think it was a VHS machine at the time, it would have been. And they had two films. And the first film was, it was only me on my own, by the way, sitting there in the cinema. They said, do you want the lights on or off, Ray? I said, turn the lights off. Right, I watched Midnight Express first. Midnight Express, very good film. Excellent film, brilliant film. And then they had this other film, which in a dark cinema, right, on your own, right, with couldn't see a fucking thing, right, I put on Eraserhead.
Oh, man, that will scare the shit out of you.
No, I'm on my own, right?
Yeah.
and I couldn't move. I couldn't even reach the VHS to turn it off. I was too scared to get up and run out of the cinema. And I sat there and watched the whole of this film, which I'm glad I did, because it's a fantastic action movie. And what I got out of it was it's a guy having a nightmare. You know, it's just, he's just got nightmares going on in his mind, you know. And to be quite honest, I've seen it again since, and I got a little bit more out of it, you know. But I think that is probably the scariest film I've ever seen, due to the situation I was in as well, you know.
Yeah. David Lynch made the scariest things I've ever seen, for sure. I mean,
very, very clever man.
Very clever man. And Eraserhead, I think now I'm older and I've seen it again, I'm like, oh, it's about, he just had a baby. It's about a man terrified of, he's had a baby and he's scared.
It's nightmare. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
And the noise, do you know what I got out of it as well? The noises in films, you know, which we don't concentrate enough on. Just the atmosphere of noise and the sound, how important sound is. Yeah. To making a movie, you know, it was quite incredible. Just the clanging and the drips of water and all that kind of shit was going on, you know. It was really an atmospheric film, mainly to do with the sound that was, you know. And it's just this guy standing there flickering, you know. And, dear, I lost some weight that day. Yeah.
Can I ask you an acting question? Which is, have you ever worked on a film where acting in it, because there was no atmosphere, there's no sound, there's no music, there's no nothing, where you thought, actually, I think this might be shit. And then when you've seen the finished product, you're like, oh, no, it's brilliant. Like, they put it together so brilliantly. But when you were filming it, you thought it might not work.
Yeah, I guess Beowulf, really. Not that I ever thought it was going to be shit, because you had no sounds, you had no props as such. You literally were in a room with white walls, you know, with dots on your head. But what it made you do as an actor, it actually made your imagination work 100 times more than it would on a normal film, because you've got to see everything there that's not there. You've got to have it in your mind, you know. So in one way, I thought at first, I don't know how this is going to fucking work. It's quite impossible, you know, and you didn't have that thing. But the great thing about it is you had all the other actors there doing the same thing. So it was because... You wouldn't do, say, one take of that. You would do the whole scene. And because it's 180 to 280 cameras on there picking up all the close-ups. So you're playing it in one. I mean, I think actually shot it in less than 6 weeks.
No way. You know?
And it took then 2 years for them to put all the artwork in and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, and the result was quite incredible, really, you know.
Yeah, it must have blown your mind.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I mean, I had an 8-pack. I've never had an 8-pack. It's quite fantastic. I looked all right. Yeah.
Did you love it, this type of acting with the blue screen?
I did.
And the,
I actually, it's probably one of the most enjoyable jobs I've ever done, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, you know, you with John Malkovich, you with Anthony Hopkins, you know, and the girls. And it was just, you know, just fantastic to be in that sort of company with those sort of iconic kind of actors, great actors, you know, and little old me, you know, knocking about from the East End, you know.
Are you ever intimidated? You've worked with, like, the greatest directors of all time. Are you ever, like, nervous?
Yeah, of course, yeah, you get nervous. I think, I'm glad I get nervous, because I think that kind of that gives you that little spurt, you know. Intimidated, no, not so much intimidated, because they want you to be there, you know. I've worked with a couple of directors who actually I knew didn't want me on the film. You know, they had someone else in mind for the part.
Right.
And that doesn't end well, because, you know, they right away they made up their mind that you're not the one for the part, and you can feel that. And it does affect your performance. It affects what you do. So that's happened. But normally it's with people that want you there and believe in you. So, and that gives you the greatest confidence in the world, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. What about crying? Are you a crier? What's the film that made you cry the most?
I've got a few of those, and they're old films. One of them was a film I can't remember the name of, but it was Walter Pidgeon was in it, and it's about a guy who loses his memory. He gets knocked down by a bus when he's off somewhere, and the woman he loves, he's forgot who she is, and he marries someone else, right? And the woman becomes his secretary, and at the end, they're at this gate, and his name's Smithy, and she goes, Smithy. And these memory comes back. I was crying. I was crying like a lunatic. But the other film is, which I watch all the time as well when it comes, and I can't miss it, is This Happy Breed. And it's Robert Newton, right? And it's about London during and after the war, Second World War, you know, and how people's lives were. You just look back. I mean, in houses that we used to live in, you know, when I was a kid. I was born in 1957, so it was 12 years after the Second World War. We lived around bombed houses, you know,
right.
And there were still live bombs in the ground, you know. And so when I watched this film of a family who lived with their nan and their mate lived next door and over the road, it just reminds me of Britain, England, especially London, when I was a kid. To be honest, I miss that, you know. And just this thing of this family breaking up and having to move away, and it just absolutely breaks my heart. And I cry like a baby, you know? So it would be This Happy Breed, you know? Yeah. I mean, I call it The Raging Bull, you know?
Yeah.
The Raging Bull is about boxing. It's about a guy who comes from the streets. But my connection with boxing, and I understand that mentality. Me and my mate who boxed together, who are still great mates to this day. You know, we went to see it when it first came out. And we're both fighters, both ex-fighters, and we're both sitting there crying our eyes out. Not about the violence or anything like that, but just about this man's pain he's going through, you know, as a fighter and trying to express himself, you know? And so, they're quite diverse films, but, I get very emotional about things, you know. And it's not, you don't always cry because you're unhappy, you know. You're quite happy to cry. You know, I'm fine with that, you know.
Yeah.
It just releases a lot of things, you know. Yeah.
When did you stop boxing? You did a lot of it, right? You were pro for a while.
I boxed quite a lot. But I stopped when I was about 22. Then I made a comeback. I had a couple more fights because you get like that. You just think, I still love doing it. But, you know, I went into a ring about 20 years ago in Ireland.
No.
With the Irish champion, and we had a little spark. God, I can't do it. No, you can't. You just mustn't. No. Get that one, yeah.
What a lie.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity, so I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term programme. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12? Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
All right, what is the film that you love? It is not critically acclaimed. Most people don't like it, but you love it, no matter what anyone says.
It's a film I've done, actually.
Great.
It's not. There's a couple of them that I've done that weren't critically acclaimed, but I just love doing them, if you don't mind me saying. One's called Tracker that I filmed in New Zealand. I loved filming in New Zealand. And it was with Ian Sharp, who was a great old friend, you know, and we went and made a film out there. And I loved doing the film. I loved making the film. And I think it's a really nice, good film, you know. And it did critically acclaim, but that's fine. You know, I'm pleased to have done it. And the other one was a film called 44 Inch Chest with Malcolm Venville. Which,
I love that film.
You know, I mean, you know, we had a lot of, we were up against it on that film a lot, you know. Special effects was taken away from us, you know. So there's things we're doing in it that don't really get explained really that well, you know. But for a performance piece and the writing, you know, the boys have written that, they wrote sketchy beats. Great writing. You know, it's when you're saying words that you really haven't got to do too much. The words are doing it, you know. And just to work with John Hurt and McShane, Ian McShane again, and, you know, and the, everyone that was involved in that, it was a great time in my life, you know, to perform, you know. So I would say those were the two that really didn't get particularly acclaimed, and probably quite rightly so. I don't know, you know.
No, I saw 44 Inch Chest at the festival, I think, at the London Film Festival. Right. And I loved it. And I went to see it because it was you and the Sexy Beast Riders. And I love it. And I think about it quite often because I like, it was a really good film about masculinity, about like ego and masculinity and how he...
And our love can take you down a certain road as well, you know. You know, what do we say love? Is love fighting for someone, or is love letting them go, you know?
Yeah.
Let them go. If they don't love you, you know, it's all that kind of shit going on. It's very clever stuff, you know.
And it's quite like it's sort of the ending. I think it's a great film.
Oh, good. That's made my day. I love it. Yeah,
I think you're right to pick that one. On the other hand, what is a film that you used to love but you have watched recently and you've thought, oh, I don't like this anymore for whatever reason that might be?
Do you know, it's really deep because that's the one question I found. You know, I spoke to you before.
Yeah.
I found it really difficult to actually dig one out. I think because when you've got a film in your head that you really did like and you love, it's still there. You know, it's always going to be there, and it's never going to go away. I honestly, and I've had time to think about this.
Yeah,
I cannot think of a film.
That's
like
all right
that.
Then.
Yeah, strange, isn't it? Because you think time changes things. We get. I'm very nostalgic, you see. I can look back at old films and they might be old-fashioned there, but that's kind of what I like about them.
Do you know? I do. Fair enough. I'm going to let you off. What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but the experience you had around seeing it will always make it special to you, Ray Winston.
Oh, there's a few, actually.
You can have them all.
It's for really funny reasons. I'd have to say The Raging Bull, you know, meant a lot. Because, you know, if film was becoming something else at that time, you know, watching Scorsese films like Mean Streets and all that kind of stuff coming through. And the difference between being an English actor, film actor, which we don't necessarily, back in the day, I'm going now, I'm not talking about today, but back then, we didn't really learn what it was like to actually act on film, you know, and to be in a movie. And so a lot of these guys, you know, if you look back on back in the day when he was watching films like Somebody Up There Likes Me, Paul Newman, Bat Boxing again, but, you know, it's the first time you saw Steve McQueen in a film, you know, on top of the roof of a Frick Blade, and up there he's a kid off the streets. And, you know, you knew all these kids came out of kind of the New York school of acting. So it was all kind of heightened reality. It wasn't real, it was heightened reality. And so you all came through that bit, and then you were watching De Niro's and the Pesci's and all that, being people that we knew. Yeah. Hold it. This is a game changer. This is a little bit of a game changer. So I'd have to say, at the time, the Raging Bull was, and of course, Once Upon a Time in America, which was, for me, which we get on to later. We'll talk a bit about that later, I guess. But I'd have to say that the Raging Bull, for me, there's one that changed my whole outlook on film, one film only, really, and that was The Tin Drum. It's a German film.
Oh, shit.
I tell you how I saw that. I saw that. I was in New York, and I forget what it was. It was probably about 1979 or something. And I was walking about, and there's a cinema, on an art cinema in New York, and there's a film called The Tin Drum. I thought, oh, it'd be about the American Civil War. It's a war film or something. You know? So I didn't know. I wasn't that arty and all that kind of stuff. So, and I paid my money, went in, and all of a sudden it started, and it's in fucking German. And I went, oh. And I got to tell you, after 5 minutes, I stopped reading the subtitles, and I knew what the film was about. In the sound. You know, very much like Eraserhead, the sound and that kind, and it hit me like Eraserhead hit me in a certain way, where European film is more like British in a way because it's real, it's reality, but that was in a very surreal kind of way. And I think that changed my whole outlook on how films should be made. You know, it was a big changing point for me in movies. Yeah. And I watched a lot of international film scenes, Japanese, Korean, you know, and forgot about it. You know, the way I look at it is that if I stop reading the subtitles and I know what it's all about, then I've cracked it. It's fine. Nice. Watch Italian movies and all that, you know. Because, to be honest with you, a lot of American films are shit. Yeah. You know, I don't want to watch them. But when they make a good one, they really do make a good one, you know. They really do. I get more drawn into the European, British kind of filmmaking is, I don't know, there's no redemption, you know. It is what it is. Have that, you know. And I kind of like that. I've seen Russian films. They're wonderful, you know. And and then you watch Korean films and, you know, and you go, Jesus Christ, the value they get out of the way they shoot, anamorphic, and they make it is a movie. You're watching a movie, you know. And so for me, you know, Raging Bull for waking my eyes up and going, wow, this we can play these scenes. We can do these scenes. We can play these people, and we can play them in a way that I'm interested in playing them. Mm. And then the Tin Drum purely for cinema and telling a story. And it doesn't matter what language it's in. So, yeah.
Having seen Raging Bull and going, and you were saying, like, British people weren't taught sort of a screen acting, do you think you just learned it by doing it? Like, did anyone help?
By watching it in films. I think by watching it in films. I always had this kind of idea that acting is about not being seen to act. You know, I mean, if Gary Oldman said to me when we was doing the album, "Right, man, don't see you acting." Thanks, Gary. Lovely. So it was kind of, that's the kind of role we was going in, because, you know, I the sort of stuff that I like to do is very social, and it's about people where, you know, I know where they come from. That was a lot of my early stuff was that.
Mm.
So you'd kind of be a kind of documentary actor in a way. You'd be, instead of like, look, I'm performing now. Oh, here we go. It was more like, you know, your performance was about not being seen to perform. It ain't easy because you don't always get it right. But that's where I come from. And that came from watching The Raging Bull. Probably watching Albert Finney as well, his Saturday Night, Sunday Morning, This Sport in Life, Loneliness as a Long Distance Runner. You know, they were British films that actually came out, I think, in the 60s, if I'm right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Probably late 50s, early 60s, around that time. And they were the films that kind of said to me, oh, I can do that. These guys come from where I come from. Maybe up north, but they're working class boys, you know.
Yeah.
So that was my kind of trip into it, you know.
My other question for you is, given how you feel about cinema and how you see it, and you visualize it and hear it, would you ever want to direct? Do you want to direct? Have you done it?
Probably should, you know. I probably should. I've got some really blinding ideas. But, it finds a light out of me watching Gary Oldman and other actors I've worked with who are directors. It's kind of 3 or 4 years of your life.
Yeah.
You know, the post, the pre, and the actual filming of it is the fun, you know.
And that's 3 weeks.
You've got to put it all together. And then you've got to edit it, and you've got to go out on the road and set it, you know. And I know Gary would love to direct again. He'd love it, do anything to direct again. But he can't afford to. You just cannot afford to have 4 years away from doing the stuff you're doing, because, you know, you're not earning a living. And directors don't get the money they're entitled to get anyway. You know, they're underpaid, as far as I'm concerned. Like the writer as well.
Yeah.
I mean, without a director and a writer, you ain't got a film, have you? So, you know, it should be well looked after.
Well, I sort of want you to always be busy, but I'd like you to have a 3-year gap so you could direct something, because it sounds like it would be interesting.
As I'm getting older, I might have a go.
Yes. All right. Oh, can I tell you one thing about Raging Bull that I'm sure you know? That do you know that at the premiere of it, Jake LaMotta was there with his girlfriend of the time, or with an ex-wife, I think. And he cried and he turned to her after it and he said, "Was I really that bad?" And she said, "You were worse."
Yeah.
Fascinating.
My God. Yeah.
Anyway, what is the film that you most relate to?
There's a couple of them as well, which I've already mentioned, is this Sporting Life. Saturday night, Sunday morning, certainly. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, just a working guy. What do you want to do? What do you want to do with your life? You know, this is what life is. And if you're lucky enough to be working, it's okay. You know, my dad worked in the meat market and the fruit markets and all that all his life. And then he went into owning fruit shops and then he ended up as a black cab driver. I come from a family of grafters, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of our heroes, working class heroes, you know. So I'd have to say a film like Saturday Night, Sunday Morning was, you know, more or less the inspiration. And you look at it, I'm not saying that that's my life, but
yeah,
it just kind of, it hit a note, you know. It kind of struck a chord with me about, you know, people are becoming very aware. And what happens is when you start making films like that, you sit back and you have a look at your own life, mm-hmm. in a way, and you say, well, what's stopping me from going out and being something else, being something different? And, you know, and if you've got a mum and dad who are like-minded and help you do that and create that, the possibility of that, then you must grab it with both hands and at least have a go, you know? And I'd say if a film was going to do that, it'd probably be that. Yeah, and looking at Raging Bull, you kind of say, do I want that life? No.
Yeah.
You don't. You know, you don't. You know, surrounded by the violence, the gangsters and all that. We play them now on films. Yeah. We haven't got a lip around it, you know? Hopefully, you know.
What sort of age was it where you were like, I want to go for it and be an actor?
I was 16, 17. I think my mum and dad actually kind of moved me on because I'd have probably sat on my arse and done fuck all, you know. And they kind of saw a little way out for me, you know, out of what, I don't know, you know. But, you know, I was just like a normal kid. I was out on the streets with the boys and doing what boys do, you know. And
yeah.
I suppose for them it was just, you know, it was another way of life. That's right, you know. And you got to remember, it was kind of a very strange, you know, for kids of my age to go into drama school and want to go and be an actor from where I came from, you know.
Yeah.
It was like, was he one of them, you know? So it's quite brave of my mum and dad, or maybe they thought I was that way inclined, I don't know. But, you know. But anyway, they looked after me and they sent me off and thank God, I went on and done what I got put down for them, you know. Yeah.
I wonder if they, because if you hadn't done, they hadn't seen you act, right? You hadn't done like school plays or something. They just.
Yeah, I'd done a 3 year school play.
Oh, you had. Oh, right. So they were like, yeah, good.
I went into school play because there was a girl in the play that I fancied. So I thought I'll go in and do the play with her, be closer to see what I need.
How'd it go?
No, it was all right. I got nothing in it. But anyway, you know, but the play was all right. And, you know, people laughed and it was called Emuel and the Detectives.
Oh, yeah.
And I got good reviews for it and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah. And I thought, oh, well, no, I can do this. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, Ray Winston, what is the sexiest film you've ever seen?
Oh, sexiest film. West End winning the FA Cup. No, I don't know what that is. I think there's a moment in one film that is very, very sexy and it's done in such good taste, I think. Maybe I'm perverted, I don't know, but it was in Atlantic City. You know the film Atlantic City?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, she's a beautiful looking lady anyway. Always has been a favourite of mine. But when she's massaging herself, you know, with the lemons, I was going to commit suicide. I had to switch it off, which was too much. But yeah, I think that was probably one of the, all that bish bash boshing is no good, but just. You know, watching a woman do that is quite perverse.
No, I think that's a classy answer, actually. I think that's a very classy answer.
Yeah,
I think so. She's just finished work and she's cleaning herself with some lemon juice.
Yeah, absolutely. Bada bing, yeah.
It's a wonderful scene.
Yeah, yeah.
there's a subcategory, Ray, and I'm almost horrified that we're doing this, but Troubling Boners, Worrying Wydons. It's a film you found arousing.
I thought all about it. So I'm trying to think of one. I'm sure there's been
a... Arousing, you weren't sure you should.
God help us. I know where you're getting it. I'm just trying to think. I actually worked with an actress once. Mm. And on a TV thing, was working. A really nice girl, good girl, which is very funny. And we had a little kiss and a roll about on the bed and all that kind of thing. And she said, "Oh my God, I've got a wide on." That's what she said. I've never heard the saying before. I went, "Oh my God." Oh, I felt very proud. So, yeah. But,
good day.
I'm trying to think. I'm quite weird. I can't remember that. You know, anyone was kissing on the telly years ago, mum and dad. Go, oh, right, that's enough. It's going with the proper stuff. You know, it was all a little bit very conservative for an old hat in my house. I don't know. 9.5 weeks, I guess. Mickey Rourke and his birthday. I mean, that was bang on, wasn't it? I'd say there's
no shame in that.
No. I think that's right. Yeah, that's right. I don't know whether they can make it today, but I mean, that's about it. Yeah. 9.5 weeks was a bit near the mark. Yeah, I probably couldn't get up and pour myself a drink for about 10 minutes.
All right. What is objectively the greatest film of all time? This does not mean your favourite necessarily. This is what you consider to be the pinnacle of cinema.
Okay, I'd say Once Upon a Time in America.
I love it.
It's so many layers in that film. You have to go back and watch it. And it's all to do with drugs, you know, on the opium. It's also to do with what might have happened, what might have been. And the telephone is so important to the film, the ringing. And you watch it, and it's about something that never really happened at some point, you know. It's a man laying on a bed thinking, what if I'd have done it that way? And that's for me why he smiles at the end. He goes, boom, you know, he's young again. He ain't the old man. He's dreaming about what it might be, what might happen. Mm. But then again, you watch it again, you'll see something else. It's the way it's shot, the music, Ennio Morricone.
Yeah, amazing.
You know, Dino De Laurentiis directed it, I think it's Sergio Leone. Ah, okay. That's Sergio Leone. Sorry, yes, it was. And just the performances, you know, it's the perfect film that doesn't treat an audience like an idiot. It makes you think. You have to think when you watch the film. And for me, that's the greatest film ever made.
You know what? It's never come up on the podcast, and I'm so glad that you've said it. It's a really exceptional film, and I think you're probably right.
Mm.
Well done. Forget. Finally, someone got it right.
Yeah, okay.
What is the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
I'd have to say this. There's a couple. Zulu, as I said.
Yeah.
The Vikings. I love the Vikings. Kirk Douglas. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the Vikings is unbelievable. They talk in Bronx accent. It's like New Jersey accents. You know, the Vikings got New Jersey. You know, Hal Ragnar's beard. Yeah. Wow. It's just a film. I just love it to bits. There's a couple of other films I love. The Searchers.
Yeah.
The Searchers. John Ford. John Wayne is immense in this film. He's just so underrated as an actor, you know. And it kills me. He just got better and better and better and better as he got older. But in this film, he plays a bigot. And it's, you know, you're against him. This is a man who's a hero. And we see both sides of a story in a way. And I read the book. I don't read many books, I've got to be honest with you. But reading the book of The Searchers is so brilliant. But it's very small chapters, and you can read it before you go to sleep at night, and you can read another chapter, but you smell the prairie, and you hear it, you hear the noises. When you watch the film, it's like a book. It's as close to the book as you're going to get with a film, right? And it's just incredible, you know, skip the Malou, my baby. I know the film backwards, but when it's on, got to have it. You just got to have it. And, for me, they're the films that I would... Beckett. You ever seen Beckett? Which is... Richard Burton.
The Man for All Seasons.
Oh, about Thomas. No. That's a great film. Man for All Seasons. But Beckett is Peter O'Toole and Richard Burton. being two mates. One's the King of England, one's the Archbishop of Canterbury, right? Yeah. And it's like two geezers having a rabbit about girls and things, you know? And it's immense. It's fantastic. It's historical. And it's shot beautifully. And it's acted superbly. I mean, two of the finest actors ever to come out of this country.
Yeah.
You know? And who were stage actors who work on film fantastic. No one taught them how to work on film. They just knew. They're probably pissed all the time. But they were fantastic. it's a film. They're my films that I would watch over and over again.
That's brilliant. Yeah. Aside from the directors you've worked with, it seems like you've ended up working with also some of your favourite actors. Were you nervous, like, first time working with those people that you really loved and admired?
Yeah, I would have been nervous of it, you know, but it's funny, you know, people that are usually good, I mean, there are exceptions to the rule here, but people that are usually really good, you know, they're beautiful to work with because, you know, they realise that it's got to be, if there's two of you in the scene, there's two of you, it's got to work, so we've got to get on with our thing, you know. And, you know, Ian McShane is one of my favourites to work. I love McShane to work
I
with.
I love him.
You know, there's also John Earp. We had a funny old relationship. Me and John, we'd argue all the time, but kind of love one another. You know what I mean? He was a good old boy, and just all them old chaps. You know, I mean, I made a film last year with a guy who was a great mate of mine, Johnny Harris. We made a film called Jawbone. Yes. You know, and you know, it's when you do studio films, it's usually a great big offence. You know, it's thousands of people on a film set and you never really get to talk to anyone and know anyone, you know? You can't remember anyone's name. I don't know. You know, you've been working with people that don't know his fucking name. I don't know. Yeah. But then you'll go and do something like Jawbone where you've got 40 crew, or you do something out in Ipswich, which I've done last year, Bit of Light with Stephen Moyer. And, you know, during COVID as well, and it was with, you know, 25 people and you all of a sudden you're making a film again. And you're talking to people, and the film becomes better for it. You know, it becomes more personal, you know? And I kind of like that. And I know when we go and do this Jimmy White film, I know that's going to be the same. We're going to have a really small crew. And I'm just looking forward to that rather than being lost in this great big machine, you know? But it's don't get wrong, it's fine. You know, it's, when you turn up, you get a buzz by it. But, you know, when you go to work, you really want to go work with people and know them, you know? It's
unknown. I agree.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to be able to answer the next question, which is, what is the worst film you've ever seen?
It's the worst film and probably my favourite film. Oh. I can answer this in a funny way.
Okay.
I wouldn't answer two questions.
Okay,
the worst film I ever saw is not my favourite film, right? I can't tell you what it's called. Harvey Keitel was in it, who I love as an actor.
Yeah.
And it was written, I believe, by David Mamet, right? And it was that quick fire and I'm talking. And I sat in the theatre for half an hour in cinema. It's the only time I've ever walked out on a film. I had to get out of it. I had to go and have a beer. It was killing me. Right? It might have been just the mood I was in, right?
Yeah.
I might have just been in it because David Mamet's a very clever writer. Harvey's a great actor, you know, and I couldn't have it. It was just, you know, that fast talking, fast snappy, shut up for a minute. Shut the fuck up. let me give me breath, you know? And I walked out of that one. The worst films ever made, who are the best films ever made, and I love them to death, is the Sharknado films. You know, Mega Shark and Megadon and all that.
Right.
I absolutely love them. I mean, my daughter goes, are you watching that Sharknado? I go, yeah, come and have a look at this. Because your effects are so appalling. It's great. It's laughful. It makes you laugh. You know, and there's always someone going to get eaten and their heads chopped away, blood spurting everywhere.
Yeah.
It just gives me a smile on my face. And they're terrible films. Now, I'm horrible. It's all violent. It's all horrible. But it just makes me laugh. And so for the worst films, but the greatest films in the world are watched and never laugh with. Yeah.
That's such a twist. What a great twist.
Yeah.
No one saw this coming. All right, Ray Winston, lover of Sharknadoes. What is the film that made you laugh the most?
Life of Brian.
Fantastic.
That's the Life of Brian. I went with my wife, who's a good Catholic girl. You know, she's a good Catholic. I said, we're going to go and see Monty Python's this new film. And I like the other one when they're all Romans and that you're fucking it and all that. And so I said, we're going to see the Life of Brian. And she said, what's that all about? I said, I don't know, come on, it's religious. Oh, okay, right, so we're sitting there. She never laughed once. It was blasphemous. But it was blasphemy, this is blasphemy. I was crying. I can see you put them up. You know, it was just the business for me. That was very, very funny. I got a bit lost when the alien come down. I thought, what's that about? You know, get back to the humour. And but it was hilarious. Probably the funniest film I've seen for a long, long time. That was the last one.
It's fucking brilliant as well. It's a really well-made film.
Absolutely.
It's quite moving in the end, I think. Like, I really... Yeah. That ending is, like, it's profound. That I think it's a fucking great film.
Yeah.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity, so I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Maureen.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator, where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12? Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
Ray Winston, you're an absolute pleasure. I've loved this so much. However, when you went out, it was olive season, November. You went out in the garden and you got your olive tree.
Yeah.
And, you know, you stuck an injection in your bum to sort out the arthritis. You're like, I'm ready to go. You put some adrenaline in as well. You went, oh, I'm up for this. You climbed the tree like an absolute lad. People at the bottom of the tree, they were going, fucking hell, it's a big tree. Well done. And you're like, yeah, no problem at all. You're knocking down olives everywhere. Olives knocking down. And then you're like, there's some at the end of this thing. And everyone at the bottom is going, don't worry about it. We've got enough olives. And you go, no, I got it. Seriously, we're fine. We don't need this many olives. You go, I got it. You crawled out. They said, it looks quite dangerous. And you said, I've got it. Stop telling me what to do. And then you fell, landed on your head, broke your neck, died. I'm walking past with a coffin. You know what I'm like. And I said, what just happened here? I heard that. They said, oh, Ray was just picking olives and he went out on a branch and now he's dead. And I went, oh, bloody hell.
That's love.
No, well, I was just sort of like, what's he doing going to the end of the branch? And they went, well, you know, we did say But, you know, he was trying to prove something. I said, that's crazy. He's a national treasure. He shouldn't be. Everyone respected him. They weren't going to respect him more because he went further out on a branch. Anyway, dead is dead. So I come along. I'm like, can you help me get him? But you're covered in olives. We have to chop you up into bits with a bit of an axe.
Oh.
Everyone's gathered around, chopping you up into bits. We get all your bits and we stuff them in the coffin. Yeah. But the coffin is absolutely round with olives and you.
Yeah.
Hips. There's no room in his coffin. There's only enough room to slide one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. And one night, it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show the people of heaven, Mr. A. Winston, when it is your movie night? Go.
The Searchers.
Excellent choice. No one else has brought it.
Yeah, The Searchers. It's a wonderful film. John Ford. Can't beat him. Best Western. The way it's shot.
Mm-hmm.
Valleys, you know, it's just incredible film. That shot at the end when he's standing in the door.
Yeah.
And I watch it every time I watch it and I see it's a flaw. You see these flaws in films and I love. And as the door shut, there's obviously someone laying on the floor because they ain't technical like we are today, you know, you've got things on pulleys. And someone's obviously pushed, they're laying on the floor and they pushed the door. And the next time you watch, you know, John's standing there and the wind's blowing and he's that way. And as the door shuts, there's a little stumble there and a little crack of light. You watch it, right? It ain't like smooth. It's just, it's a little clunkle and clunky, right? When it comes open, right? Just have a little look at it, Nick. But that space, it's a great, it's real, you know? It ain't just so perfect. And I love that. It's a film. For the atmosphere of it and everything, I absolutely adore it. Yeah, it's a great film.
Right. Is there anything you would like to tell people to watch out for coming up?
Oh, for me, I got Damsel coming up.
Yeah.
Which is a Netflix thing with Millie Bobby Brown.
Yeah.
Like it. And that comes out, I believe, in March the 8th, I think. So we got that. Yeah.
I saw the trailer for that. It looks exciting.
Yeah. I play a dad, you know, who's the lord of a part of the territory, and I try to play it in a different way than what it's written, funny enough, because, you know, it's like the bad guys and all that kind of stuff. I changed it around being a dad, you know, and I spoke to Juan Carlos, the director, about it. We sat down and the words, it makes it much more of an interesting character, I think.
Yeah.
And And just because you're doing one of those kind of films, it doesn't mean to say you sit back and just play the part. No. You bring your game to the table. And as long as you're part of that process, then you're part of making a movie, you know?
Yeah.
And that's for me, what it's all about. If you're not allowed to, then you're not in the game. Perfect.
Ray, it's beyond an honour to have done this with you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for doing this.
Ray, I've really enjoyed it. Enough, because I've kind of found out a few things about myself I didn't know, like I'm deep.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing, I suppose.
That was a bit of a shock to the system.
Yeah. Well, all right. good luck with the Jimmy White.
Yeah, bless you. Thank you very much.
And thank you so much.
So that was episode 289. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 15 minutes of chat, secrets of video with Mr. Ray Winston. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but write about the film that means the most to you and why. My neighbour Maureen likes to read them and it always touches her. You know what I mean? She's always moved by them. So thank you for that. Thank you so much to Ray for being so wonderful. Thanks to Scroobius Pib and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for another right banger of an episode. But that is it for now. I hope you're all well. In the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett.
Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful finger sticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.